Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Maybe you can drive my car, and maybe I love you. Beep, 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 yeah.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And learning to drive is nothing extraordinary if you're a teenager. But what if you're old enough to have heard that song when it was new, i.e. a boomer, and you've chosen to take on the streets of Manhattan, where many fully licensed drivers since high school prefer to stick to mass transit? That's the story told by Adam Gopnik in The New Yorker this week, where he's a staff writer. He's in one piece, as far as I could tell, looking across the desk from him now. And he joins me here in our studio. Welcome back, Adam Gopnik.
Wonderful to be back, Brian. You know, I got caught in traffic coming down here, actually.
You drove
today.
Here?
No, I didn't drive. I took a car, but I got caught at least symbolically in traffic. Don't have a car yet.
Do you live in Manhattan?
Yes, live on the tedious but car heavy UES.
And you never learned to drive until recently?
I never learned to drive. You know, I
grew up here.
No, I grew up in Canada, in Montreal, and my parents happened to live very near the university where they worked. And when I was a teenager, they didn't have a car. Got to New York when I was 20. And, you know, nobody had a car. Living in one room, and about the last thing you were thinking about was buying or operating a car. You learned how to ride the subway. You know, you learned how to connect the 6 train to the R train. That was your transportation triumph. And my wife knows how to drive, so in the summers, she would go off and do the driving. So decades went by, and I never learned to drive.
Union Square is the answer. That's where you connect the 6 train to the R train.
Absolutely.
So is this some kind of midlife crisis?
Well, as I say in the piece, I kept saying to everyone, there's no midlife crisis here. I'm not learning anything. I just want to learn to drive. So in the summer, you know, I can take the kids to the pond, right? But of course, there was a little element of that, a little masculinity crisis. And our society is organized in such a way that if you spend your life in the right-hand front seat, you're bound to feel a little like the mom. You know, you're the one who's saying, shh, kids, let's just be quiet for a moment here while your mother finds the exit, or, all right, who wants a cookie? All of that stuff. So there was a little element, especially because my son, who just turned 20, had to learn to drive. And so his learning to drive was the spur, the trigger for my learning to drive.
What do you mean had to learn to drive?
Well, he was of an age where I didn't want him to become me, basically. I didn't want him to be without that skill. And as you were saying, you know, you have to learn it young to really get it in your muscle system. And also he goes to college outside of town, so he needed to be able to get in a car and drive home.
Although the trend is, the data shows, I think, that millennials, relative to the baby boomers, don't care about car ownership. They don't want to drive. They don't want to have cars. They want to live in urban areas and be able to take mass transit.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, it's a real generational difference, right? My father just turned 80 this year. For him, getting his license at the age of 16 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, was a huge marker of autonomy and independence and so on. And for Luke, it just was one of my son. It's just one of those things you do, but it had none of that emotional loading that it did for my father.
Right. Although I wonder if, despite all the buzz around millennials don't want to have cars, when they get older and have kids, they're going to find themselves exactly in the position that you're in, which is, you know, now I have a family. I want to be able to drive upstate and go on vacation and do this and that from time to time. And they're going to find or they're living in the suburbs suddenly. And, you know, they're not living on the Upper East Side in three-person, two-room post-college shares anymore. So they're just going to age into driving.
Which is what happened to me, exactly. And it's true that in our society, you feel totally disabled. You feel you're missing some vital skill. It's not as acute in New York, which is one reason I didn't get it. But if you travel elsewhere in the country, right, and you're not able to drive, it's like you're not able to walk. It's like you have to labor to breathe. It's one of the ways that New York is different from the rest of America profoundly, is that everybody in this country drives except us.
So, listeners, if you, like Adam Gopnik, learn to drive relatively later in life, call up and tell us your story, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or if you have being a newbie driver advice for Adam Gopnik,
please.
He's all ears, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, I mean, I learned to drive when I was like 17, so I don't know what it would feel like for you? Is it like learning a musical instrument when you're grown up, like learning a language, like it's actually harder for your brain to learn
it? The thing is, Brian, I've been doing a series of pieces for The New Yorker about learning to do stuff late in life, learning to draw, for instance. I did one. And learning to drive, my experience, isn't like all those other things, because those are things you learn kind of piece by piece, skill by skill, and you build the skills one on top of another. The weird thing about learning to drive at an older age is that you realize it's not that difficult. It's just incredibly dangerous, right? You get behind the wheel, you press the gas, you turn the thing, and you're moving. It just is you're in control of this 2 tons worth of steel. And at any moment, you could press down harder on that gas and blow out somebody's window, knock somebody over. I think that that was the thing that was most impressive for me, is it's astonishing in a sense, Brian, that we managed to have traffic that makes any sense at all, given the inherent risks of the internal combustion engine and us sitting behind it.
Lauren in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
So when did you learn to drive, Lauren?
When I was 48 years old.
48.
A mere child.
And I want to let everybody know, for all those procrastinators out there, that it is possible, and I consider myself a really good driver. Mm-hmm. And the only difficulty was trying to man going from Brooklyn streets to Brooklyn highways. That was the real, and driving at night, that was what mm-hmm. really put me over the edge in terms of nervousness, but it was totally doable, and I feel like I'm a really great driver now. And everybody told me if I hadn't learned before I was 30 that I'd never be able to do it with confidence, and I just want to let everybody know it's not true.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about the hard part being going from Brooklyn streets to Brooklyn highways. Having lived in other cities, I know that New York has the shortest entry ramps to mm-hmm. highways, probably in the developed world. Probably in the world, like a stop sign at the end of a ramp. A stop sign, you're supposed to be gradually picking up speed to merge because there isn't enough space. It is so treacherous to get on the highway here.
And 20 feet of space to pick up speed, it's really scary. In fact, when I first started driving, I sort of calculated which were the worst on-ramps, and I would drive like to a uh-huh. whole other neighborhood to get to an on-ramp. That I'd feel more comfortable with.
I totally know this. There's one near me in the Bronx to get on the Deegan
right.
where you have a stop sign. And at the end of the hour, I don't want to do this, and I will drive around to this other place to avoid it. So I hear you, Lord. Thank you.
Although, you know, one of the funny things I found is I had a wonderful driving teacher, is that in a weird way, once I was on the highway, in the FDR or the Bruckner or something, I found that in some ways was easier than trying to negotiate street traffic. And it was almost a relief to get on. But it's true. You sort of can't believe it. You suddenly become this salmon swimming upstream at a panically quick pace.
Is that your experience in general? I'm curious, because it's my experience in general. Driving on the highway is easier. I mean, you have to be aware, obviously, but you're basically, you know, in a lane and you shift lanes if you want to pass, or if somebody's passing you, you're aware of that. It takes so much more concentration to navigate your way around city streets.
Absolutely, particularly New York City streets, because behavior is so erratic, right? Nobody obeys the law. Pedestrians come racing across red lights. Cab drivers think nothing of crossing two lanes in 2 seconds. So, yes, I find that I was almost a relief to me, as I say, with my wonderful driving teacher, Arturo, to just say, okay, now we're going on the highway, right? And it's a little bit less nerve-wracking.
Debbie in Sussex County. You're on WNYC. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I was 35 before I learned to drive, and one of the triggers, well, I should explain, I lived in New York, and I lived in London in my 20s, and I didn't, you know, couldn't afford a car, and I had to see all the hell people went through trying to find parking and things like that, and but it was coming back to New Jersey after the birth of my first son, mm-hmm. and literally still riding my bicycle. What I wanted to add, and as I said to your screener, when you ride a bicycle in Manhattan, and I used to commute to work on a bicycle, you are fearless. If you can survive riding a bike in Manhattan, driving a car is nothing. And that has proven true for me. But it was standing on a very cold, windy corner with my then 3-year-old son waiting for yet another bus, and I looked down at him, and I was so filled with guilt, and I thought, you know, this is crazy. And ironically, unfortunately, we lost our parents in a car accident. And
oh, dear.
That was a trigger when I was 35, I thought, if I don't do this now, and I let procrastination and fear overwhelm me, I will never do it. And ironically, since I've been driving, I drive everywhere. And in Sussex County, which is very rural, you absolutely have to drive. Mm-hmm. You have to drive to change your mind. And I love driving now, and I drive everywhere, and I feel like I have to pay a karmic debt to all the people that let me be the passenger in their front seat. I also want to add that if you don't have a driver's license in this society, aside from not being able to drive, it's like you don't exist.
Yep.
Try proving who you are without a driver's license.
That's one reason Mayor de Blasio instituted this municipal ID.
Yep.
Exactly. And as I said to my son, now I have two sons, one of whom moved to Manhattan, and he did exactly what I did. And I begged and pleaded with him, my older siblings, it was a rite of passage. They were all driving by 16.
Yep.
I begged him and pleaded with him. He did not learn to drive until 2 years ago. And now not only does he drive, and, you know, like a lot of people in the arts, he has a day job. One of his day jobs is delivering pizza. So he's a driving fool.
There you go. Debbie, I'm going to leave it there. Get some other folks on. Thank you.
You know, one of the things that's curious is that it's, you know, heartbreaking to hear that her parents were killed in a car accident and so on, is that a lot of people are saying that we're right on the cusp, Brian, of entering the driverless age, when the driverless car will take over and will reduce those kinds of risks. And people will look back on the 100 years of driving, the risks we took, the fatalities we endured, the convenience we earned, as this very bizarre thing peculiar to our civilization, that we did this very high risk thing so willingly and so universally.
People don't realize the numbers. We did a show on this recently, how the numbers of people injured, never mind those killed, which approaches the number of murders in New York City every year, the number injured is so high. It's like you have a higher chance of getting injured in a car than you do getting mugged in New York City over the course of a year.
Absolutely. And it's just it's built into the nature of driving. You have this huge thing that goes very fast and you're on there with a lot of people. You know, Brian, there's fascinating sociological studies of this stuff too, in the school of Irving Goffman, where people point out that one of the weird things about driving is we imagine we're sort of alone in the car, and we don't fully credit that everybody else on the highway is like us, is an agent with their own erratic will that they're going to exercise. That's why we get shocked when suddenly someone pulls in front of us. We curse because we don't quite take in that we're on a highway filled with human beings.
And we're supposed to practice what they call defensive driving.
Yep.
But I think people tend to assume that the other drivers are going to do it right.
Exactly.
And therefore, we can take our, you know, little cheats here and there.
Let our mind wander for a moment, right? Because everybody's got goodwill on this highway. No one's going to be nuts out here. Yeah, no. That's one of the things you have to unlearn when you're learning to drive.
Claire in Queens, you're on WNYC with Adam Gopnik from The New Yorker, who's written this week about learning to drive at a relatively older age. Hi, Claire.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I'm 29 years old, and I just bought a car with my boyfriend, but I don't really know how to drive. I have my license from college when I got it in Connecticut, where they basically didn't even ask me to parallel park, so it was really easy. And I kind of sat on that for like 8 years or so. So I'm actually just learning to drive right now, and I find it to be really scary and intimidating.
In the city?
In the city, yeah. So I'm driving in Queens and in Brooklyn, but I haven't yet made it into Manhattan.
And you know what I did, Claire? When I was learning to drive as a teenager in Queens, took the driving test in Nassau County. But you can do that.
Smart thing to do, right?
It's so much easier, especially with the parallel parking. You wind up only having to park behind a car.
Right.
And
yeah,
I think
exactly.
That's officially the test, right? But, you know, they'll have to cruise around Elmhurst for 20 minutes to find a spot that only has a car in front of you.
Yeah, I was hardcore. I did the thing in the town, in the boroughs, and it is demanding. The one piece of advice I would give you, Claire, is that it's like everything else in life. You have to learn to defuse your own imagination, because your imagination of what can go wrong can disable you from doing the right thing. And like so many other things, the degree to which you can make it sort of an unconscious physical task instead of a hyper-conscious mental task, that's the relaxation that, at least for me, got me going.
Claire, thank you. Good luck. Do you think there was anything easier for you about learning to drive because you were older? We talked about some things that might be harder. Was there anything particularly easier? Maybe you just have, you know, a greater perspective on the whole thing or something like that.
I think two things, Brian. I think, first of all, you're less inclined to use the car as a vehicle for your own masculine prestige. You've lived your life, so you don't need to speed in the way that kids sometimes want to experiment with. The other thing is, too, and to be blunt, is that you learn how to take tests. You know a little bit more about what you need to master in order to master the driving test. One of the things in our society that's very vital is that you learn how to do well on tests in the course of a lifetime. And that's one of the things that older folks have and have some experience with that kids don't. And that very often I think teenagers fail the driving test because they don't understand that you have to enact your own safety. You have to enact responsibility. And teenagers, as we all know, are not often good at enacting responsibility, even if they are inside responsible.
John and Sandy Hook, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, Brian. I'm 75 and I'm blind, and my wife has been driving for almost 60 years. She's a wonderful driver. I'm living in a rather suburban place, so that you need to get into a car to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I've spent my life waiting for a ride. I'm looking for the day when an automatic car comes into view sometime before I die. I would love to get into one and drive off on my own.
Do you know, that's very close. One of the things I didn't get to write about in the piece in The New Yorker, but I studied a lot, was the whole approach, as I say, of the driverless car, which is just what I used to need, what you could still use. And it's coming quite soon. Google has a program. In Europe, there's a big program called Sartre, of all things, to do it. You know, one of the complexities of the driverless car is you have to program it to behave ethically. In other words,
yeah,
the car's got to know if there's a dog racing across the street and a school bus to your right. Do you hit the dog and avoid?
You have to be able to see the screen in order to program it.
That's right. So it's they're coming. They really are coming, but it's trickier than you might think to make them work.
You hit the dog.
I'm sure it is. Voice activated would mean a lot to me, but it'll come someday.
It is on the way.
John, thank you. I'm so skeptical of this. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, I realize there are some things that machines are just better at than people, and we talked before about how humans are so accident-prone in cars, even with the best of intentions. But really, we're going to let a machine navigate everything in traffic and not use human judgment?
You know what's fascinating about Brian? The European model is for a convoy, right? You have like 20 driverless cars all together. That's what they're going for. We have, of course, totally individualistic autonomous model. But as I say, the ethical dimension is really tricky. As I was saying, you know, do you hit the dog and avoid the school bus? You have to teach a car to do that. And it's a hard thing to teach when you also wanted to know, slow down so you don't hit the dog if there's no bigger ethical obstacle in your way.
I guess you hit the dog is the unfortunate choice, sadly.
And yes, but you have to learn to do that. Right.
You aren't the only one, obviously, to learn to drive as a grown-up. And you found a teacher, I see in your article, who specializes in teaching older adults.
Yes, I think he's had people older than I am, a wonderful guy named Arturo Leone, and he's done 70-year-olds and 80-year-olds and gotten them off. And yes, you're right, Brian. There's a wonderful literature now about learning to drive. My friend Katha Pollitt wrote a wonderful book called Learning to Drive. And most of it's by women for whom it's an empowering act, right, to be able to finally take control of your own life by driving. For a man like me, it's a more comical thing in lots of ways because nobody expects us not to be able to drive.
But Arturo has particular tools as a teacher that makes him effective for older drivers?
His motto is become the noodle, become the noodle. And it took me a while to realize what he meant by that. And he meant, as I was just saying to Claire, he meant learn to relax. Let your body become as limp as a noodle because that's the only way you can defeat your own kind of panic. And he also, I think, he has the idea to that New York's a wonderful place to learn to drive because if you can learn to drive in New York, it's like the Frank Sinatra song, you can learn to drive anywhere. And I think that's true. So learning to navigate the streets of the South Bronx is a much better guide. It's like going right to the game level 20 rather than starting on game level 1 like the suburban kids do.
Now, without getting us fined by the FCC, the concept is the noodle and the hand.
The hand. Arturo's thing was always be in communication with the other drivers around you. When you've done something wrong or they've done something wrong, just give them the hand. The hand means everything, right? The hand means hello. The hand means goodbye. The hand means maybe you just didn't do the right thing there, so to speak, my friend. But one of the things that I think is true is that you need to learn to drive. We talked about this before, Brian, by becoming aware that there are other minds out there. And the more you communicate with those other minds, with your eyes and the hand and everything else, the likely you are to be what Arturo would call a safe, skillful, and secure driver.
Or as you put it in the piece, if I remember correctly, the hand can mean thank you, bless you, blank you.
Exactly.
You only need one finger for that. You don't need the whole hand.
Exactly. And that's what citizenship is all about, having one signal that means many things, one thing to you and another thing to the public out there.
We're taking this to the level of citizenship?
I think so. You know, one of the real revelations for me, because I always kind of hated cars, Brian, as a New Yorker, is that there's some wonderful demonstration of citizenship in the way that we drive. We really do, on the whole, make it work. We yield to each other. We make way. We slide over. We give way. A highway is kind of the social compact going 45 miles per hour.
Falenza in Bridgewater. You're on WNYC. Hi. Falenza, you there? Hi there. Hi there. You're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, my family and I came to the United States from Kosovo 22 years ago, and my mom never thought she would drive. Like, that was never an option for her, ever. But when she got to be 60, she's like, I'm going to drive. I want to drive. And
that's the Kathapalik story.
She got her a license, and she drove for a couple of years, but she never drove during the night. And one night she... Well, I made her go from my house to my brother's house, which is about 11 miles down 22. And she got pulled over for going way too slow. Six police cars, and then she never drove again.
That's always a risk, right? One of the truths about the citizenship of driving is you go like everybody else. There's a kind of enforced conformity about it. And those of us who are novice drivers think, why do I have to go that fast? But it's part of the common flow of driving.
Right, yeah, she got too scared, and then she hasn't driven since, but she has her license, and she's very proud of it.
I think I saw when I was in South Florida, where I guess there are a lot of older drivers, that they not only post the maximum speed limit, they post the minimum speed.
Absolutely. Well, this is a whole issue, you know. It's about older drivers, right? How you get drivers on the road is one thing. How you get them off the road is all of the problem. My dad has been driving for 60-plus years, just turned 80 in Canada. And they gave him a test. They do that in Canada nationally. You've got to show every year from 80 on that your eyesight is still there, you're still competent to drive. And they take away licenses.
And I do know an older driver who finally gave it up voluntarily because, like what Falenza was talking about, she found herself out of fear going slower and slower and slower and wasn't ticketed for it, but she realized she was in danger.
And you see that if you go down to Florida where you see, you know, gray heads or bald heads at going 15 miles per hour around, and it's your great-grandparents. My father, you know, for whom driving, as I said before, Brian, was a big means of autonomy, was, I think, very insulted by being asked to take a driving test again at 80. But it's probably a wise, talk about citizenship, a wise thing.
Drive in Miami with a lot of 80-year-old Jews and 20-year-old Cubans. It's an interesting experience. Thank you, Adam Gopnik, New Yorker staff writer and the author of several books, including The Table Comes First, Family, France, and the Meaning of Food.
Great to be here.
Shut up and drive, 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 drive. Shut up.